Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. How's it going, everybody? Before I get into it, let's take care of a little business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder and more. Ain't get much better than these guys. Had a great time in the Blade Show, and they are providing value for you. If you want a 2x72 grinder or you want attachments to retrofit your grinder you already have, go to BroadbeckIronworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10. You get 10% off the grinders, attachments. They got a power hammer. Just give it a check. Check it out. Love those guys, and many thanks to them. Many thanks to my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. I swear by my Even Heats. I use the tap control, which is like a little computer. It looks like an iPad. It's touch screen. Their solid-state drive keeps you even, and if you're doing high temperature, low temperature, it's going to keep you where you need to be. Get yourself an Even Heat. Stop playing. You know what I'm saying? You got to get it hard. Use an Even Heat. Next, I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply, maritimeknifesupply.com, for all your knife-making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kiln, forges, press, heat treating ovens, all that. They're in Canada, but they ship to the United States with ease. And if you go to maritimeknifesupply.com, you get 10% off your abrasive belts when you buy a 10-pack. So definitely go to Lawrence Lake over at Maritime Knife Supply. He is one of the best at facilitating. He's also involved with the New England School of Metalwork. He's also involved with the Center for Metal Arts. And those are very, very important schools that I'm very appreciative of. So if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. And they're the sponsors of Can Iron. Can Iron is a blacksmithing event up in Canada. It's coming up in August. And for more information, go to caniron.ca. Check it out. Go get yourself some of that. You're going to have some great guests. They're going to have Jake James, Pat Quinn, who should be on shortly. He's going to have Leah Arapach. You're going to have Noah Vachon. God bless those boys up in Canada. Can Iron, baby. Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stabler-Owned Knife Finishing Vice, makers of knives, teachers of classes. Go to TrojanHorseForge.com, and if you get one of their Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vice, you get 10% off with Full Blast 10. Yeah, you heard it. Full Blast 10, get yourself one of them Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vices. I want to thank my friends at Baker Forge. It's BakerForge.com, BakerForge.com, Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. My boys, Coy and the boys, are figuring out. They're doing the copper my, the copper Damascus, bronze my, sand my, mosaic Damascus. And if you go to BakerForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST, you get 10% off everything. And not to mention, they got the gator piss. You're saying, whoa, you've been away for 2 weeks. I don't know nothing about this gator piss. Gator piss is a proprietary etchant. And they have new branches of the proprietary etchant. You know, you're making some stain, you're making some Damascus, and you got to etch it. You got to separate them high nickel from the high carbon. You know what I'm saying. You got to make it pop. So you got to use that gator piss, GATORPISS, gator short for alligator, piss short for urine. And if you want, you check out their newest products, they have Gator Piss Max. That's for stainless Damascus. Using that Damasteel, get yourself some of that Gator Piss Max. And they have Gator Piss Heavy for that heavy black for large amounts of stuff. So definitely check out that. And you can also get your gator piss at Texas Ferry Supply. And you go to TexasFarrierSupply.com. That's where I buy my rhino wet, ladies and germs. And if you go to Texas Farrier Supply and you put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you can get 10% off. So when I get my 220, my 400, 800, I'm peeling off 10% with promo code KNIFETALK10. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat, totalboat.com/fullblast. That's your link to get yourself some, get me some street cred and get yourself some of the best two-part epoxies and adhesives, paints, primers, polishing compounds, all that stuff. I use Total Boat all the time. I've been using Total Boat for like 2.5 years for all my handle scales. I love it. And I also use their CA glue, and I love that. And if you're going to Maker Camp, I will be doing something with Total Boat. So definitely keep your eyes open, keep your ears open. I'm going to do something with them boys and girls over at Total Boat. So go follow the direct link, totalboat.com/fullblast, for helping your boy out. You know what I'm saying? All the links are in the show notes. Wherever you're listening to this, all the links are in the show notes. So definitely get yourself some of that Total Boat. Get that two-part epoxy and see what happens. See what it going on. And tell me all about it. I want to thank my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. I had a nice conversation with Greg Hansen a couple weeks ago. Guy's great. He's making the G-Carta. That's gcarta.bigcartel.com to see what the fuss about. G-Carta is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics and pressure and fabrics mixed under epoxy with pressure. Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm G-Carta. Mikey's figuring it all out. That pheasant, that colorama, that hoopla, amazing colors and razzle dazzle. He sent me some of the amazing trout and fish colors, and it's awesome. And now we're getting to the point now he's getting so famous for, you know, I think he started off with the Mexican blanket stuff that, you know, my buddy Josh Scott uses, and a lot of these guys are using it. And now he's got all sorts of different colors. But my customers are asking for it by name. So definitely get yourself some of that G-Carta. Go to gcarta.bigcartel.com and say hello to Greg and Mikey for me. Next are my friends at Tormek, celebrating 50 years plus being in business with the Black TH sharpening system. Go to Tormek.com, Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. The guys are great. Customer service is dynamite. Great company. They sent me another Tormek. I know, and I know. At this point, I have enough Tormeks that I could come up with a car, and then all my wheels would be abrasives. And then I bet I could roll, if I had a power source, I could roll down the street with my Tormek going 1 mile a day. You know, I don't know who the hell knows. But I'm using that Tormek and I love it. And it's keeping me sharp and it helped me to figure out how to be make my knives better. So go to Tormek_sharpening on Instagram and say hello to them, or you go to Tormek.com, or go check out my interview with, I was in last year about this time, I was in Sweden, and you can talk to them and you can listen to that episode and hear about Tormek. And you can also listen to my episodes with Carl Friends. I mean, Carl's the man. He works for Tormek and they're great. I love those guys. So definitely get yourself involved. And if you have any questions, feel free to send me a message at fullblastpodcast on Instagram. And, you know, if you have some Tormek questions or any questions about any of my sponsors, feel free. And, you know, I get a lot of messages about former sponsors. If I'm not talking about them now, I ain't talking about them later. You know what I'm saying? If I talked about them in the past, I'm not talking about them now, then I don't have a relationship with them. You know what I'm saying? There's one especially that I get a lot of messages about. I don't want to say the name. Nothing but respect, but it's like, there was a kind of, you know what I'm saying, you know how, where I'm going with this. It was a product that I was pushing in the beginning, and the guy left. The guy walked, you know, who knows, disappeared into the wilderness, in the vapors. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Well, we'll talk about that some other time. But if I ain't talking about him, that means that, like, you know, I ain't with him anymore. So, but I am with Tormek all day. And I'm also with my friends at Nordic Edge. Nordic_edge on Instagram, nordicedge.com.au. I love these guys. Bjorn and Sausage Man are figuring it out. Not only do they sell knife making equipment, if you're in Australia, their file guide's amazing. I love their file guides. You can also get that file guide if you're in the United States. You want to get it, the Nordic Edge file guide, you can get it at Maritime Knife Supply. The file guide's amazing, and not to mention they teach knife-making classes, blacksmithing classes, leatherworking, spoon carving, all that stuff. So before you decide, hey, I've been listening to Knife Talk, and I've been listening to Full Blast Podcast, and Jesus Christ, I want to get all this stuff, but maybe I should take a class first, and I'm in Australia, and I can't go to the Center for Metal Arts, and I can't go to the New England School of Metalwork. go to NordicEdge.com. They teach classes, and you can tip your toe and see if this is for you, because it might not be for you. I want it to be for you. I want it to be for you because we want, you know, I want your sponsors. I want my sponsors to know that they can count on you to give them all your money. You know what I'm saying? But we got to make sure you're right for this. We got to make sure it's a good fit. So go to Australians. Go to NordicEdge.com.au. Check out their classes. Buy their stuff. See what's going on, because they have the guidance to accelerate your creativity and the tools, products, and supplies to help you manifest your ideas. NordicEdge.com.au. If it's good enough for Sausage Man Forge, if it's good enough for Mertansu, it's good enough for you. Because if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me. You know what I'm saying? You put Mertansu on there, I'm done. That's about as good a recommendation you can get. Bjorn, too. I want to thank my friends at Phoenix Abrasives, phoenixabrasives.com, for superior abrasive products for every application: knife making, metal fabrication, glass fab, floor sanding, and crankshaft. Yeah, baby, crankshaft belts, grinding, cutting attachments, cutting discs, flap discs, surface conditioning, all of it. And they have different companies. All the companies, well, I only use this company. They have it. I don't use that company. I use this company. Go check it out, phoenixabrasives.com. And then if you put in the promo code FB10, you're going to get 10% off of everything on their website. So definitely check out my friends at Phoenix Abrasives. Many thanks to them. I'm appreciative of them, and I'm appreciative of you. And we are going to do a little catch-up. Haven't been around for 2 weeks. And not only have I not been around for 2 weeks here, Full Blast Podcast, but I also, we took 2 weeks off at Knife Talk. So we took a little summer vacation, took a little summer break. There was a lot going on. I'm going to cover everything. Seems like there was a lot going on in the fader world. And then what happened was I was scheduled to go to Spain for the 4th of July weekend. And we just decided to take, and then Mareko's got stuff going on, and Craig's got stuff going on. And we just were like, we always take like a week or two off in the summertime. And we're just like, let's just take a week off. So then when we came back, I said this on Knife Talk a couple weeks ago, and this will be the footnote. I guess if you listen to Knife Talk, I'm going to say, we got a lot going on. I said I have family health issues. I'm fighting on two fronts. It's a two-front war for health in my family, and I'll talk a little bit about that today, catch up with you. But this will be... If you listen to Knife Talk, and I say, I got this two front war I'm fighting in the Fader family, that'll be the footnote to come here, and then this is me explaining a little bit more in detail. So I went to go to Spain, and then I ended up getting some news about 2 months ago. I got some news. My older sister wasn't well, and she's got a pretty bad diagnosis a couple weeks ago, and right before I went off to Spain. And I was just like between the business and between the podcast and between everything, I was just like, something got to give. So I thought, after I came back from Spain, I said to the guys, let's just take the day off. Let's take in one. It's okay. Everyone will be okay with another week. And if you listen to radio or you listen to podcasts, this week is the week that everyone takes off. So there isn't fresh stuff. Everyone's taking a little bit of week off. So I said, all right, let's. And then I'll make it up to you guys, because, you know, on Knife Talk and here, I make it up to you. I already have. We got Bob, Everyday's Feast Day, is coming back next week to answer your question. We had too many questions. I got Pat Quinn coming back on for a great question with Pat Quinn. I need your blacksmithing questions. Send them in. We have a lot of good fun friends, and I'm making it up to you, but I wanted to kind of catch up. So before I went to Spain, I want to tell you about Spain. Spain was amazing, and I'll tell you a couple crazy stories. So here's what the plan is for today. I'm going to catch up. I'm going to talk real. I'm going to tell you real stuff, not like these other podcasts where it's all, you know, bullshit, horse shit, and, you know, very insincere nonsense. I'm going to tell you some jokes. I'm going to tell you some sad stuff, but I'm also going to tell you some gallows humor. So just be prepared. And I'm not, you know, I'm just going to keep it real. And I'm going to tell you some funny stuff. I'm going to tell you some stuff that's not so great. But at the same time, if I'm telling you, here's where you laugh, you can laugh. Feel free, okay? So it really started before I went to Spain. I think I've told you guys about my mother before. I don't talk about her very much, but my daughter's 20 and my daughter was born, my mother was living in New York City. And she was kind of retired and she was kind of languishing in the city. We live about 45 minutes north of the city. And it got to the point where I thought, you know what? As my daughter gets older, it would be great if maybe my mom can be more involved with the family, move up to. So she moved up to the town that we're in. And, you know, it was kind of a production getting her up here. And Lila was very young, my mother would pick her up from the school and everything like that. She would kind of keep her company. And then, you know, as she got older, it became very clear by the time Lila got to middle school that, you know, my mother was, her health wasn't great and her, you know, things were kind of slowing down a little bit. And it was very clear that between mental health issues and, you know, all this other stuff, it seemed as though, I'm glad she came, she was close by. I could kind of monitor her and keep her company. But at the same time, you know, things were starting to go, you know, poorly. She wasn't really taking good care of herself. But at the same time, like with a lot of aging parents, and some of you guys are listening to this and you're just like, I don't know, half of you guys are barely out of puberty. You just got a couple of armpit hairs and now, you know, you're looking at me like, what are you talking about? I know all about it. So what happens is a lot of times parents will kind of, as they get older, they kind of hide and they kind of camouflage some symptoms of, you know, growing older. Maybe I'm okay, everything's fine, or they start to get a little forgetful, and then I just get a little forgetful. I get a little forgetful, and but my forgetfulness is backed up with, I don't remember, nor do I care. That's the move. Now you're gonna, if I don't know and care, that's when you got to start to worry. And if you listen to the Knife Talk, and someone asks a question, and I'm supposed to answer it, and I say I don't know. If I don't follow that up with I don't care, then you start to worry. I don't know and I don't care, I'm fine. I don't know and I care about why I don't know, call the cops. call the cops. Call my wife. Tell Jeff, though, he's starting to care, okay? So, you know, it was very clear. And then the worst part is right before the pandemic, it could tell that she was really like, she was hiding her health issues. She wasn't really letting me help. And then she crashed her car, and then there was a lot of like, I don't know what I was, you know, I don't know why, I just, you know, passed out or something like that. And then, you know, I was taking her to the doctor, and then right before the pandemic, and, you know, she was refusing help, and it was difficult. It was a difficult situation a lot of people go through. During the panty, we got her into a senior living place, but not like a home, like a old folks home, but it was like a senior citizens place where people could kind of get together, and it was a lot easier for, you could eat there, and it was like, you know, and it was great. We got her right in at the pandemic. I felt like we kind of got her in a place where she could make friends and all this stuff, and then it kind of like things just started to spiral. And I remember things really started to spiral. I was taking her out for, and this is right before the pandemic. This is right, I don't know if this is right after the pandemic. I took her for a drive. And and at first I thought, all right, she says she's okay. And at the same time, you want to respect her independence. And at the same time, you want to respect the independence. But at the same time, in your guts, you know, you can't force a person to do a certain thing. And you can't make, and, you know, once again, all you armpit, you know, armpit hair people that just don't know what I'm talking about. That's what I'm going to call you youngsters. You one armpit hair person and you don't know what I'm talking about. You can't make people do what you want them to do. You can't make your family do what you want them to do. You can't make loved ones. You can't make your parents, even if you care about them, you can't make them do, you can't make them live for you. They got it or they don't. So listen to me, you one armpit motherfuckers. You can't make people do what you want them to do. So I drove my mother, and then she wanted some ice cream. I took her for some ice cream, and we're parked by, it was this pier. It was a beautiful view of the Hudson River, and we're having a conversation, just kind of like catching up. And then this is when I knew shit was bad. She just turns to me and she goes, now don't be concerned, but I'm asking you this one time. Are we sure my parents are not alive? And I looked at her and I said, Mom, parents have been dead for like, I didn't say it like that, but I'm like, they've been, you know, they've been dead for 20, 30 years. But she said it in this very honest way. She didn't know. And she's just like, look, don't be nervous, but I'm asking you this. Are we sure that my parents are not alive anymore? And that's when I was just like, oh boy. So I could tell that, you know, things were starting to go bad. And then her health started to not, she wasn't taking care of herself. She said, oh yes, I'll take care of myself. And she didn't. We, you know, got rid of her car. And then I got started to get calls from the home, that they were saying that they would come in and clean the house once a week. And they were saying, this is, she's, you know, they were telling me what's going on with her. And it was just very clear that she needed some like guidance, some help, some assistant. So she refused the assistant. She refused the nurse's aide. She refused. And I said, Mom, they're going to throw you out of here unless you get a nurse's aide. Got the nurse's aide. And within 30 minutes of the nurse's aide being there, they called the ambulance because she'd something going on with her. Ends up, that was about it. It turns out they found out that she had a stroke at some point that she was hiding. She was just kind of like acting. I don't know what it was. We didn't know that she, you know, this happens sometimes. And then, among other things, she had no control of her diabetes. And it was very clear that she had dementia. So she was, you know, we found her a place between the hospital, getting to the rehab facility, and then she was in the hospital for like a week. She was really kind of in, you know, bad shape. The rehab facility, we ended up getting her into this home that was part of this place that was part of the rehab facility. And for the past 3 years, she's been living there. And the great thing is they take great care of her. I visit her. She is, for the past 2.5 years, she doesn't know who I am. She's really gone to the point where she thinks I'm her brother. She hasn't said my name or acknowledged me as her son in about 2.5 years, which is, you know, stunning. It's one of those things where you're not, and I'm going to tell a funny story. Don't get depressed now, you one armpit hair motherfucker. Just relax, because your turn's coming up. Don't worry about that. So, you know, it becomes, you know, and then she doesn't have a sense of time. She's happy to see me when I'm there. She thinks I'm her brother. And, you know, the fact that she likes the place because she likes being taken care of. They take good care of her. She's not a problem. She's happy that they, you know, they bring her food. For some reason, she thinks the chef does a great job. I mean, this is some bullshit. She used to be a real Madison Avenue 4-star restaurant person. Now she's thrilled with the, I think she had one night she had a Salisbury steak and she was just like, oh, you have no other compliments to the chef. I mean, but you know, she's happy. We visit her. She's always happy to see us. She doesn't really know who we are. But at the same time, you know, she's happy when we're there and, you know, she's, you know, doing all right. I'll tell you one funny story. Now, this story, I don't know if I should tell this story. I'm going to tell it now. We made some decisions that, like, she doesn't know what's going on. She's constantly thinking there. Every time I see her, it's almost like a reset. She asks how her parents are, and she asks how her brothers are, and I'm one of her brothers. Well, she asks her parents. Really, she's, I don't know what's going on with dementia, but what happens seems in this situation is she seems to have reverted back to her childhood. So she's asking, she thinks I'm her bro. She calls me her big bro. Oh, my big bro is here. And I don't correct her anymore because it confuses her. And also when you start to say, oh, Mom, it's me, it's Jeff. It's hard not to say that, but I don't want her to feel bad about herself. I mean, now we're in a position where it don't hurt anybody. If she thinks I'm her bro and I'm, you know, problem with me, and I prefer her to be comfortable and happy, not confused, then, yo, it's your big bro. What's going on? Well, yo, you know, I'm not going to give her a noogie or anything like that. How funny would that be if I like pretended to be her long lost or Pat, her brother who passed away. That's the other thing. One of her brothers passed away and I made the conscious decision. I went down to the funeral. And I made the conscious decision not to tell her because it just would be upsetting to her. Anytime we would bring up someone who passed away, she'd be upset. It would be like, it's imagine torturing someone and they forget about it and then just torturing them again. So there were some times where I told her, no, your parents, and I was trying to remind her, no, your parents passed away. And then she'd be upset, like, if she heard it from the first time. So I'd be just like, I'm not going to torture this poor woman. I'm going to give her love or bring her stuff, you know, take good care of her, make sure she's taken care of. She's clean. She's relatively happy. She sleeps all the time. I ain't going to torture her all the time. You know, I ain't going to torture her. And we're at the point now where this isn't like teaching a child. You know, there's no, no one's winning. You know, she's just going to, we would have a conversation and 5 minutes later she forgot there was a conversation. She's got no sense of time. So my wife and I were there and we were talking and how's this person? And then she said, and then I said, yeah. And I don't bring anybody up because if you're going to bring it up, so she asked about one of her brothers and my wife, she wasn't paying attention. And she's good at this. She's a nurse practitioner. She's good at this, but it was just like, well, you know, so-and-so had passed away. And she goes, What? And I said, no, mom. Everybody's fine. Nobody else has passed. And then I stop everything. I turn to Hillary and I give her the old, you know, thumb over the, cut it out, you know, like the cut it out, you know, the hand under the throat and just like cut it out, you know. And I go, no, mom, everybody's fine. Nobody else is dead. I promise. And it started to be funny. And she just starts to calm down. I said, Mom, everybody's fine. Nobody's dead. And she turns to me and she goes, well, not everybody's fine. And I looked at her. I said, what do you mean by that? She goes, well, they're not fine if they're dead. I swear to God, I left there. I laughed so hard. It was such a funny thing to say. And that's, you know, gallows humor. You got to take it where you can. So I've been visiting her every so often, and one of the things that happens with a lot of these older people, and hasn't been walking. She doesn't really walk. She also doesn't have a sense of interest in things. Like she sleeps, she eats, she watches a little TV with her roommate, and then that's about it. So they do some physical therapy with her, but she isn't really interesting. She isn't really interested. She's pretty wasted away. But she's happy to see me when I'm there. Thinks I'm a bro. No problem. So I got every so often I'll get a call. And this is what happens with a lot of these guys, these people in these places. They fall out of their bed. Maybe they're trying to get out of their bed. Something agitates them. So I got a call that she had fallen out of bed. And they said they're going to take her to get x-rays. Because, you know, you just got to make sure. So turns out she had a fracture in her femur. And they were waiting. This is like right before I was going to go to Spain. And they said she's in good spirits. She's in good shape. She doesn't, remember any of it. But they're going to take her to get x-ray, get some imaging done. They got some imaging done. Turns out she had a fracture on her femur at a place where if it gets worse, it would collapse something like into her hip. And there's a chance that she would, if she doesn't get something done, she could have to get a hip replacement. So I talked to the orthopedic surgeon. The orthopedic surgeon said, look, I said, is this really necessary? I want to make sure. The most important thing is she's comfortable. Is she in pain? She's not in pain. But when they're changing her and kind of cleaning her and taking care of her, she should be as comfortable as possible. And if she doesn't get these two pins put in, I guess they're putting a couple of pins in and then throw some wire in there and make sure that it heals in a specific way. Otherwise, there could be some, you know, damage that would require hip replacement. That would be a major inconvenience to her and uncomfortable 100%. So I said, well, listen, I talked to the orthopedic guy. I was like, whatever you say. And I, you know, here, and I'll tell you this right now. I don't remember. And I didn't remember which hip they said. I was just like, which femur. And I was so like crazed by the fact that this happened that I wasn't paying attention to which hip it was, which leg it was, the right or the left. I don't know, and I don't care. How's that? Back to that. See, I'm okay. Guys, don't call the cops yet. I said, I don't know. I don't remember, and nor do I care. Cops, don't call the cops. I'm fine. I'm being flippant. Relax. So I guess like 2 days before I'm going to fly out of Spain for the Barcelona for the class we're going to talk about, they said that they're gonna treat her. They're gonna give her a They're going to bring him to the hospital. They're going to undergo as a very simple surgery, 45 minutes, and the doctor explained what was going to happen. Once again, I forgot which side it was, and this was a problematic. I wouldn't write it down. I just thought, you know. So the morning of, I came to the shop early because they're going to call me when in the operating room. And all of a sudden, I get a call, and it's the hospital, and they just want to, Mr. Fader. We have your mother here, and she's doing well, and she's going to get ready for this surgery, minor surgery, and we just have to ask some questions and answer all the questions. And then, you know, what's her religion? And I say, she's Roman Catholic. And they're like, okay, Catholic, all that stuff. And then they get me on the speakerphone. It's about 7 o'clock in the morning. I went to the shop early. And they said, are we going to put you on speakerphone with the doctor and your mother and everybody in the operating room? So there's two nurses. There's the orthopedic surgeon. And then there's the guy going to knock you out. What is that called? The guy going to knock you out is the guy going to knock you out. See, I don't remember and I don't care. Remember what I said? Oh, there's a thunder going. I don't know if you heard that. So the anesthesiologist. See, I care. Don't pretend like I don't care. So that actually this works out perfectly. So the doctor gets me on speakerphone and the nurse of the hospital gets me on speakerphone and says, all right, Mr. Fader, I just want to know, do you know, what's your mother's name? They had basically like, you know, in the hospitals now, they got to test you because otherwise they don't want to make any mistakes. So, you know, what's your mother's name? What's her date of birth? And then I answer all the questions and they said, do you know what's happening today? And I said, yes, my mother's having surgery. Where is she having surgery? And I said, she's having surgery on her femur. And they said, which femur is she having surgery on? And then I don't care and I don't know comes in. I'm like, I don't remember. And then I hear silence. And then I hear the nurse turn to the doctor. I said, I don't feel comfortable with this. And I said, I don't remember if it's the left or the right, but I know she's having surgery on her. I talked to the doctor. I understand she's having, well, which is it? And I said, I don't know. I don't remember. So they said, we're going to call you right back. So it's a total disaster. I hope you can hear that thunder. It's we're talking Monday, July, something or other. And so they call me back and the doctor is very quiet on the phone and he says, he explains what's going to happen in very great detail. And I was like, yes. And then they get me back with the nurse. And then I say, yes, it's on the left side. I know what's going to happen. Yeah, all squared away. So they say, we're going to bring you into the room with your mother. And you can say hello. I thought they brought me in to basically say to my mom, if this is it, it was good knowing you. So they brought me in the room, two nurses, the orthopedic surgeon and the anesthetist, is that right? Anesthesiologist. Put me on speakerphone and I said, all right, Kathy, your son's here. And all I hear is, no, no. I said, hey, mom, it's me. And then I hear, I don't want this surgery. Now, she wanted it last night. She understood what was happening. She was fine with it. She said, I don't want it. And I said, mom, this is going to make you feel more comfortable. This surgery is going to make you feel more. I don't want it. No. Screaming and hollering at me. You know, this is a woman who doesn't really know what's going on. She's confused. She's got dementia. But she has a leg that if she don't fix this femur, and I'm the goddamn proxy, if she don't fix this femur, it could turn into something way worse and way more uncomfortable and way worse. She is screaming on the phone, and she says, no. And then the nurses are quiet. The anesthesiologist is quiet. The fucking doctor is quiet. No! She's screaming, no! And I said, mom, what? You have to listen to me. She goes, no. And I said, mom. She said, no. And I don't know what came over me, but my father came out of me and he goes, what? And I say, and I turn, there's silence. And I'm like, they're expecting me to say something. And I said, what do you mean? No, which is totally, I mean, maybe two people in this world will get that. My sisters would probably get it. What do you mean? No, that's what us Jewish people say to our kids. What do you mean? No, no. What do you mean? No. And then the doctor gets on the phone with me and he says, don't worry, this happens all the time. People with late stage dementia, they get a little bit confused, but everything will be fine. I can promise you she's not going to be in any pain and this will make her feel better. And then they get off the phone and the last thing I hear, and then before they hang up, I hear, help, help, she's screaming help. And it is, it's when I tell this into the microphone, I'm thinking to myself, this sounds bad, but in my mind, in my heart, it's funny. It's funny now because, I mean, you know, this is what happens. So I get a call an hour later. Surgery went great. I can come visit her. And that night, she called my wife. I'm like, you got to help me out. You got to help me come to the, go visit my mom. She's going to kick my ass. This 115-pound woman going to kick my ass. And I need you to help make sure she don't kick it too hard. No problem. We go over to the hospital. She's just a different person. Oh, hi, hi. This is, she introduces me and my wife as her siblings. Oh, these are my siblings. And how is the surgery? What surgery? You know, meanwhile, she got a pile of tubes coming out of her and she can't get out of a hospital bed. And it was actually, you know, relief, you know, happy to see me. Everything's fine. And that's one thing, you know, that was one stress. Then 2 days later, I run to the airport on a Thursday, and then I go to Spain. Now, what we do is, so I do a workshop every summer with my man, Tomer Botner, over at Florentine Kitchen Knives. We've been doing it now 6 years. We did it the first year we did it, it was 2019, and it's a collaboration workshop. So what we'll do is we'll do these, it's interesting, it's a different type of class than you would imagine it would be. Usually when you think of knife making classes, you think of like a group of 8 to 10 people in this big room. There's a million grinders and you're taking turns and everybody's working out. But the way we do it is because of the space and everything like that, we're doing them in stages. So someone will come, the two people will come for 2 hours, and then we'll grind the knives, talk about knife making, talk about heat treatment. And then they'll, once they're done the grinding, obviously we're right, you know, Tomer's one of them, I'm with the other. And then they'll go to the handle stage, and then Tomer got a guy helping them fix their handles up, put their handles together, and then the next people come, and then, so we're grinding all day. Tomer and I are grinding all day with about 8 people, 2 at a time, 2 hours a piece. It's a long day, but it's great. So that's what we've been doing for a while. Then the second day people come, and then the handles all glued up by the end of the first day. The second day they're grinding the handles, they're hand sanding the handles. Then they learn the sharpening class with their sharpening teacher. An Ayanori-san who does their sharpening, and Japanese sharpening is all amazing. So that's the game plan. So what I do is I figured out, usually what we'll do is we'll do 2 weekends. We'll do 2 weekends, you know, back to back, and I'll show up. The first class starts on a Saturday. And then what I figured out how to do it the best way, because I don't do well with the time changes, like 7 hours. I don't do well with it. So what I do is I'll get a flight, Thursday night flight, overnight flight, that gets into Barcelona at like 6 a.m. And then as soon as you get on the plane, you go right to sleep. Right to sleep. That's the move. And the reason why is because you can kind of catch up. You can kind of, the big mistake when you're flying across, if you're flying east and you're losing hours, the worst thing you can do is stay up. And I know a lot of people say, I can't sleep. I'm like, you got to do whatever it takes. You get a couple of Benadryls, you do whatever it takes. I don't drink alcohol on a plane. I don't really think it's a good idea. I don't want to take a leak every 5 minutes either. You got to get it to sleep. Take a couple of Benadryls, do whatever it takes. So get to the airport, go through security, get my shit together. I'm starting to talk to my sisters. And I'm talking to my sisters because we got some, I don't know, did I say it in the beginning of the second front? The second front of the health battle is my older sister Jenny is not doing well. She has been not well for a bit, and she is got a very, very tough diagnosis. Tough enough, I ain't going to talk about it too much, but it's a tough enough diagnosis that, you know, time is not on her side. So before I was in the airport, I was talking to my younger sister Carrie. And was younger, she's just older than me, but she's younger than Jenny. Jenny is my oldest sister. So what it comes down to is, just to give you a little bit of background, my dad had been married 4 times. My dad was married 4 times. The first person he married was a woman we don't know anything about after World War. He was in World War II. And it's a mystery bride. We don't know anything about this person. And then his second wife was my sister's mom. And then he was with her for a number of years. And then they got divorced. And then he married my mother. And the crazy part is my dad was the same. My dad is exactly 50 years older than me. But he was exactly 30 years apart from his older daughter, Jenny, who's not doing so hot. My relationship with my daughter is exactly the same age as Jenny was to my father. So we're 30 years apart, almost identical. It's just like it's like this new parallel that I'm really kind of enjoying. So growing up, when my parents got divorced, I talk about this a lot. That I was alone a lot of my life. And a lot of it's because when my parents got divorced, my mother was really like, I don't know. Frankly, I don't know. She was trying to get her life together. This is back in the early 80s. And she was trying to get her life together and trying to get a job and also trying to like work on herself. So she wasn't around a lot for me. And then my dad was on to his fourth marriage. And he just wanted to fucking, my motherfucker was a cut bait dude. Like he cut bait on his family. So, I mean, he didn't completely abandon us, but it was as if he did the bare minimum. He was there for me in terms of, you know, college and helping me with college and stuff like that. But in terms of like, he was ready to, you know, find his happiness. I think the funny thing is the parallels that I had with my dad, my half sisters had with him as well. So my older sister, Jenny, really kind of took me under her wing. I'll do more of an episode on Jenny a little bit later, but she really was someone who I give a lot of credit to because I loved her. She was a wonderful person. She is a wonderful person. I saw her this past weekend, and she really pushed me to do some things that I didn't expect. And one of the things that by the time I was like 12, this is something she and I were talking about this weekend. She took me aside and she said to me, Jeffrey, both my sisters call me Jeffrey. I could kill them both, but you know, look, they call me whatever they want. You know, I don't tell them what to do. They're old enough to be my mother. You know, Carrie was like 19 when I was born and Jenny was like 22 or something like that, or 20 when I was born. And so 17, 19, something like that. They call me Jeff. They always saw me as like, not a younger brother, but almost like, yeah, kind of a younger brother, but also they were both very maternal towards me. And Jenny was very maternal towards me. And she also could tell that I was alone a lot. And she was concerned. She said to me when I was 12, she says, I'm very worried about you because you don't have any interests. And I didn't know. I said to her, you know, I was telling her, we were talking about it. And I said, I didn't even know what that meant. Both my parents were away. My parents really weren't around. I was kind of raising myself. I talk about the fact that Howard Stern raised me. I'm not really kidding. I used to spend time with my sister, Jenny, because she lived in the city and I could take the subway to get her. I was taking the subway at 13 to go visit her because no one was around. And she really kind of made me nervous because I didn't really realize that parents are there to kind of also show your kids that there are other things to do out there. You know, like this is my opportunity when you're a parent of a child, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to say, hey, they don't raise themselves. You know what I'm saying? Kids aren't supposed to raise themselves. You're supposed to kind of guide them, but also help them in terms of getting ready, preparing them for life. My parents didn't prepare me for life. Like they just kind of, I don't know. There's a lot of parents who just think that kids are going to kids don't need guidance. They just kind of like hatch and then they become, you know, whatever they become. And a lot of times they need the guidance of saying, hey, this might be fun for you or that might be good for you. And in that situation, no one was around to tell me, hey, you know what? Maybe you would like to do this. Maybe you'd like to do that. And she really kind of scared the shit out of me and got me to the point where I had to figure out what to do, you know, figure out that, oh shit, I got to have interests in life. I got to have interest if I want to have a job that I'm passionate about or be creative or whatever. To the point where everybody was surprised and shocked that I became an art major because they just like didn't know where it came from. And the crazy part was my dad was furious I became an art major. And then I wish he was around because I would have said, well, what, you didn't really give me any suggestions on what would be good for me to do. You didn't really put me down the path in regards to what I can do. So it's just like, you know, you're on your own, and then you make a decision, and you're like, if you're a parent and you say okay to your child, all right, you're on your own, and they come back and you're just like disappointed with their decisions. Just like, well, I mean, you, if you didn't really say anything, then, you know, tough shit. You know, it's just kind of a, you know, you had an opportunity to kind of guide somebody and you just chose not to. Jenny was a big, big supporter of mine, and she was always there for me. And Hillary was referring to her this weekend as a, you know, a mother, a maternal figure, a unsung mother to me, which I definitely appreciate. So she's not doing so hot. And so I'm at the airport and I'm talking to both my sisters, Jenny and Carrie, but they're sisters. They're, you know, true. They're the same mother, same father. They're very close. And then get on the plane, getting ready to go to Bars, get on the plane, and then off to Barcelona. Get to Barcelona, wake up in the morning. You know, and what the worst part about the flying to Barcelona is, a 7-hour flight, not the craziest thing. I was listening to some of the they were going, they started out in, I don't know where they started out, but they were leaving from JFK to go to Barcelona, and the next stop was going to be Delhi. And it was the same crew, and all I could think of is, I can't imagine being a flight attendant on a flight where you're going from New York to Barcelona to India to all this place. It's just like, you know, these people don't get any sleep, and it's kind of a crazy life. So they get on, they get to the airport, they get to the, you know, they get up to a certain whatever level, and they start bringing the dinner service, which you don't really need, hour in. And then they give you this, some bullshit, and there's no way to sleep because they turn the lights on, and they're hawking everybody in China, and you eat the garbage, and then they take your plates, and then you sleep for 3 hours, and then they wake you up for breakfast because they're trying to get you on, you know, Europe time, which is annoying because it's just like, you know, it'd be great if you could do a do not disturb, but I'm cheap. I don't really spend. The move is to get a better seat on the way out, because you really want to sleep going towards Europe. And then when you're headed back to the United States, you want to stay awake. You want to kind of like catch up and like get on the right time. So I get a better seat on the way out because I want to stretch my legs out. I'm, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Get through customs. I'm in Bars by around 7 a.m. Everyone's telling me, be careful. They don't like tourists in Barcelona. They're hitting everybody with water guns. Apparently, there's these protests going against Airbnb, and the protesters happened last year too. And all these people who live in Barcelona, they're having a real problem with the rent, because the rent's going up because real estate is becoming harder and harder, and people are starting to realize that they could use Airbnb to rent their, get more money at Airbnb, and then the local people can't find housing. Apparently, there's supposed to be a, you know, everyone's totally aggressive towards the tourists. I didn't see it, and I talked to some people who live in Barcelona, and they don't never see it. So we didn't get any of that. I got a couple messages. People say, watch out, they're spraying tourist water guns. I'm like, I'm not a tourist. I'm staying with my mans. I'm staying with Tomer Botner and his wonderful wife, Noam, and their two kids. Get in the cab, show up, get there right when the kids wake up. I got gifts for the kids. Get gifts for my mans. All my boy wants is Knicks gear. Tomer is a rabid Knicks fan. Got him some Knicks hats that he can, you know, I got him the Knicks stuff. I got the kids the Legos. And we drop our stuff off, and we have a system. We have a system in place. Go to the shop, drop a couple things off. I brought some knives. I brought some Baker Forge steel knives. Baker Forge got me some steel. I made some blanks. We're doing a couple collaborations. We got 4 Baker steel knives that I ground and heat treated and templated, I cut them profiled, ground them out, and then I heat treated them, tempered them, and they're over in Barcelona. We're going to do a collaboration, and then I forged an integral bolstered version of the classic Florentine kitchen knife, and we're going to do that. I brought 5 knives over there. You got to put them to the plane. You know what I'm saying? You got to put them to the plane. Can't bring knives on your carry-on. And then we have the greatest tradition of all time. Tomer makes reservation for this restaurant called Ultra Marinos Marine. If you look at faderknives.com, and every time around August, I'll do a reel from Ultra Marinos Marine. Ultra Marinos Marine is this, it's not even a Spanish restaurant. I think that it's supposed to be more Catalan. Maybe even not Catalan. Catalan, it's very tribes, Basque. So the chef is named Borja. Borja is the man. And we taught him the knife making class the first year we did it, like back in 2019. And he is just like, he is an unbelievable chef. He's very Basque, and the food is very like specific towards these, you know, groups of people. And one of the things he's known for is he's known for making garam, not garam from India, garam masala. Garam is an old Roman version of a type of fish sauce. So they take fish guts and fish stuff and fish this and fish that, and then they ferment it. And it's this very, it's like, it's similar to Vietnamese fish sauce, but it's definitely a little bit different. Salty. It's got that kind of, I don't want to say umami. It's just like, I won't do that to you, ladies and germs. I can't do it to you because it's so annoying. There is nothing more annoying than when somebody describes something, oh, it's that umami. But there's a flavor from this fish sauce that it's like, it's salty. It's kind of unctuous. It's got a richness to it. It's the kind of flavors you would get that you can't describe. That's what umami is, like a steak or tomatoes or mushrooms or soy sauce. It's got this kind of like very, very addicting flavor. So he makes all this garum, and he's cooking everything. He's got this steel, oven, and he's got a steel suite with the, you know, put the wood underneath. He's at the flat top, and he's got the charcoal. It looks like a torture chamber, frankly. And then he's got like a rabbit and a couple animals all split in two, and you know, like a, you know, in some sort of, it's like some sort of fucking voodoo ritual a little bit. If you look at my reel, you'll know what I'm saying. Go to Fader Knives and look at the reels. But he's unbelievable. So he's got this amazing, he's got all this wood that he's got a wood fired ovens, and he's got wood fire, everything's wood fired. He's got wood fired grills, and they cook all this very local seafood based off of the area. So in the season. So there's white shrimp. And then the white shrimp, you eat the bodies raw, but the heads are grilled. And then they have red shrimp. And then you have langoustines. And then you have the bonito. And then he cures the fish. And then he makes these chicharrón, which is like, chicharrón is, it's different from place to place. Chicharrón is kind of like the pork belly. And then there's a fat cap on top that's fried and really crispy. And then what they do is they'll make it, and it's almost like beef jerky almost, but with the crispy top. And then they'll cut thin slices like a bite. And then you get this bite where part of it's the chicharrón, like kind of like the pork rind. And then the other part is like almost like this softer beef jerky. It's incredible flavor. And he'll throw some garum on there, a little olive oil, salt, and stuff like that. And then he'll bring out the fish, meats that he's cured. This is pork, and this is beef, and this is, everything's done there. And then they sent out a langoustine they split in two. And then he goes to the fish place, and all the fish is fresh. And he's got these guys, and this is raw, and this is fresh, and not a vegetable to be found. But this time he did. This time he made some very thinly sliced zucchinis that he salted them, bring out the water out of them, and then he grilled them, and then he put some garum and some lemon juice, and it was unbelievable. I mean, the food is unbelievable, and it's all the bites, the tapas bites, and then he sent it. I mean, it was like, it's crazy. And you go there, and Tomer and I are having a good time. We're always sitting with him, and Borja is a madman, and all these guys, they all have tattoos, and Borja's got the greatest tattoos. Some of them, there's a shrimp, and then there's a this. And the next thing you know, I'm looking at his forearm. I'm like, that zombie on his arm sure does look like Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig, the former James Bond. And I turned to Chef Borja. I know this guy now 6 years. He's been cooking for me for 6 years. Now I feel like I know him. Usually I bring him a knife or bring him something. Last year I brought him a poker because he's got all this fire, and He's all this charcoal, and I brought him a poker and stuff like that. And I said, Chef, is let me ask you a question about that tattoo. Is that a zombie version of Daniel Craig? And he goes, yes, it's exactly what it is. It's hilarious. And he tells jokes, and we have a glass of wine, and then there's everything he makes. And it's beyond the best food. And I'm spoiled because it's like every bite is delicious. He had these potatoes that were like poached and then smashed and then baked and then fried and then pan fried. And I'd never tasted a potato that was so potato like this potato. This was the best tasting potato I've ever had. And he's like, I said, why is this the best tasting potato I've ever had? He goes, because I get fresh potatoes and I do this to him and I do that to him. I'm like, everything is simplified. And this is one of the great things about this kind of style of cooking. Everything was very simple. He said the devil's in the details. So it looks like there's nothing going on, but there's so much preparation involved. And the flavors were fresh and they were salty and they were savory and they were just everything about it was unbelievable. So we waddled out of there, and then he's got a new deli right next door that's called Ultra Paninos. And that's like all the cured meats that they make, and they're making sandwiches. They sent us out a hot dog. This hot dog's unbelievable, and they put kimchi and mayonnaise on it. It was unbelievable. They had potato chips. These are the most golden potato chips you've ever seen. Everything's great. We're all waddling back to the shop. Ready. Saturday, day one, all the time. People coming in. Some of them are Knife Talk listeners. We get Knife Talk listeners. Some people came from the United States. Grinding. Everybody figures it out. We have a great time. The one-on-one thing is nice because then people can answer your questions. And then, you know, at the end, you might have to make sure that you just got to make sure to make a beautiful knife that you're not, that, you know, you got to make sure that they come across the finish line and it's everything's good. So, you know, you're keeping an eye on things. Don't do this. Push there. We're using jigs. And end of the day, we crash out. I think we went out for dinner. And then the Friday night, Saturday night, and then Sunday, we finished. Everybody came in. They picked their handles out. We ground the handles, hand sanded the handles. Everybody went in. Everybody came out with a beautiful knife. And then brought it to Ayanori-san, the sharpening shop, and he taught them the easiest understandable way of how to hand stone sharpen a knife. And this is the problem with if you're a knife maker, people overcomplicate knife making and knife sharpening. And this is one of those things. This is one of those things where you've really got to, you know, keep it as simple as possible. And he has kept it as simple as possible. He's figured it out. He figured it out. So everyone finishes their knives, and we laser engrave them, and then, you know, and then we, you know, and then at the end of the day, we have a party on the rooftop. Well, depending on the weather. This year, Tomer became friends with this chef. His name is Jack. He's an Australian guy who does everything. He's like very, you know, very specific and, you know, in terms of like the understanding the food and where it comes from and this, that, and the other thing. And the food was amazing. So we all showed up. We helped get the tables in, table set and everything like that. Everyone shows up. Jack has made an incredible meal, and we have just a wonderful time talking to students. The students bring their wives, or girlfriends, or boyfriends, and, you know, everyone's bringing some people, and we had beautiful natural wines, we had beautiful food. It was just a great experience, and we're going to do it again. So we're excited. I love Tomer and Noam. We have a very special relationship over the years where what I've learned from Tomer has been a lot in terms of business. He's actually given me the kind of confidence to be a little bit more, the crazy part is, and we talk on Knife Talk, we don't talk about this enough, but the business end of understanding of how to be a leader and how to know when to make tough decisions, how to know when to invest in something. And then if that thing you're investing in doesn't work, how do you know when to cut the bait? We had a PR company with us for a year. And then a couple months ago, we had to cut them loose. And we cut them loose. And when I say cut them loose, I'm being very flippant. But we had a real, you know, it was one of those things just wasn't working out, and we parted in a very positive manner. But it was the question of knowing when to do it. When, how much time are we going to invest with them? And then is this something, is this the direction we want to go? And in this situation, we left on the best possible terms. I'm still very friendly with the people that we worked with. It was just one of those things where it just, you know, we just decided to go separate ways. But we, in business, you have to come up with a conclusion in without there being, you know, like, you have to be able to understand where taking calculated risks is important, but also kind of knowing when things are going, you know, things are going right or things are going wrong. I've learned a lot of that from Tomer. Tomer has is like, you know, he's redone his website a number of times. He's made calculated decisions. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work. We talk about a lot of those things, and those are the kind of the unknowns in the kind of business that you just, you know, watching the market, what's working, what's not working, and then what are we going to invest in? A lot of these guys who are listening to this podcast, a lot of the guys listening to Knife Talk, they when they think about investing, they're investing in a power hammer, or they're investing in a tumbler, they're investing in a press. But sometimes, you know, the production part isn't your problem. It's the sales part. So it's understanding how, okay, where we got to go, or if maybe somebody's going to leave your shop, maybe all of a sudden the person that you hire is going to quit, or maybe they're not going to show up anymore, or maybe you're not going to get rid of them. You got to learn how to have these kind of tactical decisions that benefit you short-term and long-term. And I've learned a lot of confidence from him. He has given me a lot of confidence to say it's okay to make mistakes. Everything ain't going to work. But the more important thing is when you recognize something going to work, how you take care of it. So we had a great time. And we're going to do it again. So if you want to join us in Spain next year, go to FlorentineKitchenKnives.com, get on their newsletter, and you can sign up for their class. We've already have a few people who are already signing up. And we usually do it the first week of the last week of June, first week of July. That's just generally speaking when we do it. So we'll do two weekend classes generally. But in this case, you know, we only do one weekend. Part of that might be because of what's going on in the world. Maybe people were afraid to spend money. I think that might have been part of it. And then we only do one weekend, which is fine by me. The reason why it's fine by me is when we realized, I realized that when my sister wasn't well, we wanted to make arrangements to go down and visit her. So, you know, it was, if I was in Spain for 2 weeks and, you know, and really just kind of like not knowing what was going on with my sister Jenny, I would have really regretted it. So I was kind of relieved, frankly. But being in Spain was great too, because it kind of got my mind off of what's going on with my sister and my mother and all this, the other thing. We had a great time. Get to the airport the next day on the way home. So I got there, I got in there Friday, Saturday the class, Sunday the class, and then Monday I'm back in the airport. And some people are like, I don't know why you do it. Like, wait, listen, I got things to do. I got business to run, I got things to do. I got to go. Get in. I got a couple places I stop by. There's a sandwich shop. I get a jamon for the road. I get a jamon sandwich for the road. That's the pork. And I'm always afraid of bringing. I want to bring in some jamon ibérico. That's the famous ham. It's like prosciutto, but it's a little different. Sorry, guys, but it's better. Jamon is better than fucking prosciutto. I don't care what you say. I'm more Italian than Spanish. I'm 1% Spanish, but I'm like a quarter Italian. And I feel very strongly about the fact that jamon ibérico is better than prosciutto di Parma. I'm sorry. And I'm not, and this isn't like, you know, fuck you, it's Italy. I love it. I'm Italian. I'm more Italian than I'm Spanish. 1% Spanish, by the way. Sorry. When it comes down to it, ain't nothing better than ibérico ham. And the sausages, all that stuff, they don't put any shit in it. You know, that's the other thing. All this meat, all the food in Europe, they're not putting all the same shit that they're putting here in the United States. You're not getting that bullshit over there. Well, you're probably getting a little bit of it, but not as much. So I was going to, but I'm so chicken, and I ended up bringing back some canned seafood that was like dynamite, and get online to the passport control. For some reason, passport control is way slower than it usually is. And then there's a guy in front of me who's very, very like, he's getting late for his plane, and he hops over one of the ropes, And he might as well have robbed a bank because people went fucking ballistic and the passport control people are freaking out. They're stopping everything. They're getting on. They're screaming and hollering at him. He gets back in line and he turns to me and he goes, well, that was extreme. And I was like, yeah, but you did your best. You almost got him too. And I was like, yeah, you don't really almost get him. And they had you, you know, you weren't going anywhere, my guy, but I appreciate your effort. A for effort. The passport control, this for some reason, was just jam-packed and got in there, got on the plane, stayed up the whole time, watched the worst movies. Dear American Airlines, if I got to stay up for 7 hours, you got to do better than The Equalizer. I'm out watching The Equalizer. Because I heard The Equalizer was good. I watched Equalizer 2, Equalizer 3. Jesus Christ, this is terrible. I do like Denzel Washington, but God damn, those are some hours I never got back. And then I ended up watching Mickey 17. Terrible. So I get off the plane. I'm tired. 7 hour flight. Get to the car. I'm ready to go home. It's about 5 o'clock by the 5 o'clock EST. You know, when you fly back against the time frame, flat earthers, don't worry about this. I teleported. I don't understand the flat earth thing because the flat earth thing can't explain the fact that there's a time change and the sun is up at different parts at different times. So when you're in Spain, it's 7 hours ahead. So the sun is up earlier than when you're in the United States, you're in New York, the 7 hour difference. So I don't understand the flat earth thing and I wish you'd all stop it. You all need to focus more on Jeffrey Epstein and less on flat earth. Jeffrey Epstein, far more compelling and interesting than goddamn flat earth. Flat earth, you're wasting your time. Jeffrey Epstein, okay? Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein. That's it. That's as political as I get. Get to the car. Pay for the parking. Guy brings the car out. Get in the car, and the car is beeping like I've never heard it beep before. Fucking car is beeping like crazy. Never heard the car beep like this before. I'm thinking, all right, well, I'm sure it'll go away. Ugh, I was so wrong. Pull out of the parking lot, run down the street, realize that my brakes don't work. Brakes don't work. I push it all the way to the end, and they finally work, and I realize there's something majorly wrong with the car. So I'm in Ozone Park, which is 55 miles away from my home. I call my wife. I landed. I'm in the car, but the car broke down. She goes, what do you mean the car broke down? Well, the brakes don't work at all. And it's beeping and the lights are on and I can't brake. The car won't brake. It brakes just if you push it in all the way to the end, it brakes. So I pulled it in on a side street and made the decision that I'm not going to, you know, drive this on the van wick all the way home. I'm going to die if I can't pull the brake. Call up AAA, and AAA lets me know that I'm only on the basic plan. And the basic plan means that you only give me 3 miles. I got to pay $5 a mile after that. So I'm like, well, not much I can do. My wife comes down. The tow truck driver drives the car up to the house. I got to pay for the parking. I got to pay for the tolls. I got to pulls back and forth. I got to pay. Bring it to, now it's about 11 o'clock at night. I've been up almost 24 hours. And we drop the car off. Hillary gets me home. I just get in the shower and then I go right to sleep. Next morning, just try to get back to life. I left the car at my guy. Guy says, I'll get to you. Doesn't get to me day one. I'm trying to get through, you know, shop and everything like that. Next day, wake up. I call up. He goes, he says, your car is done. Now my guy is great. But here's the thing about my guy. When I drop the car off, he pretends not to know me. I've been going to him for years. I've brought 4 cars to this guy. This guy knows me. He knows my name. He knows me. But when I drop the car off, he pretends like he don't know me. When he's done with the job, he lights me up like I've never been lit every single time. The prices are always good. Feels like a fair guy. I've known him for a long time. He does like my old bosses and stuff like that. But it's like he reads me the Magna Carta. Get on the phone and he says, yeah, the car's done. And he goes, You're all lucky if you're lucky that you're alive. What the hell were you thinking? I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, how are you driving with the car like that? And I said, I didn't. I drove to the airport and it was fine. It braked fine. It drove fine. No problems. And then when I left it for 4 days, this would have happened. He goes, you're lucky to be alive. The brake lines were all rotted out. You know, it was a matter of time. Car's got 200,000 miles on it. I'm running this motherfucker into the ground. He's like, it was a matter of time, but he says, you're lucky. He's like, and he keeps on saying to me, you're lucky you're alive. You've been driving on, driven on the road like that, you're done. You know, car gonna, you know, got lucky. He's a coincidence. And he said, the brakes are done. The brakes are down to nothing. They're down to stems and seeds, which I thought was really funny. And he's lighting me up. I'm like, okay, is the car done? Car's done. Gives me the bill. I'm like, go pick the car up. Tells me the whole thing. I'll park. Car's all fine. So that's one another stress down. And then this past weekend, we went to go visit my sister. We all decided, my wife and I decided we want to come see her while she's feeling good. And then we flew our daughter. Our daughter's in California, daughter Lila. She's been on the podcast. We decided to fly her in for the weekend so we could all spend some time with Jenny. And I'll tell you one of the things I'm most grateful for. And this is something, you know, not something to do with the business, but I mean, part of what we're doing here, Fader Knives, is my sister called me up before I came down and she says, I have a menu and I want you to make me. She didn't say it like that. She's not like that. She's just like, I need you to cook me some food. And she was really looking forward to, she's a good cook, but she doesn't cook what I, you know, I've always been cooking for her. And the amazing thing was I felt so honored. She wanted me to cook her a steak. And it's funny because she's like, my sister has always been, how would we describe her? A convenient vegetarian. When I'm around her, when she was around my dad, or when she was around me, she always wanted a little bit of salami or a hot dog. She always loved the hot dog. But then she, rest of the time, she's, you know, this, you know, staunch vegetarian. But when I would cook her meat, she would always say, I want you to kill it. I want you to really overcook it. But she really was looking forward to me to come down and cook her steak. And I said, Jenny, I'm going to make this steak just how you like it. And I know how you like it. And she goes, how's that? I said, you like it dry. You like it gray. And you like it tough like shoe leather. And she goes, yeah, that's the way I like it. I said, I'm going to make it just like that. And I was just honored. I mean, I was honored, frankly. I mean, I know if everyone's just like, oh, dude, this is what she wanted. Listen, when you're not doing well and you want me to cook for you, I'm going to make it the way you want it. Get down there. It was great to see her. She was so happy to see Lila. She's so happy to see me and my wife. I'm going to go back down in August and, you know, just kind of whenever she needs to be there for her. And we're going to talk a little bit more about Jenny I'm working on an episode about her. She's really terrific and really inspirational. She's one of my favorite. She was an important person in my life, but as an artist too, she's an incredible sculptor, and her sculptures really were very inspiring to me. I'm going to link her website to this episode, and it's jennyfader.com. I loved her website and I loved her work. She did this beautiful work. We're going to talk about more about her work later. But it was an amazing time. I'm tired, you know. I'm still fucking jet lagged, but I mean, you know. We flew down. We had some really great time. We made a lot. And I went down there to make laughs, making jokes. We're making jokes. And I'm making jokes. And Lila's making jokes. And we're just trying to keep the spirits up. And I got to make her some of the food that she wanted, which she really appreciated. And we had a great time. We had a really great time. I actually got, before I before I started recording this, I got on the phone with her. I'm calling her every day, and some days she picks up, some days she doesn't. Some days she got good days, some days she didn't have good days. But I got to say some things to her that I never thought I'd get to say. And she was, you know, when my father was not well, and he was kind of like, you know, not doing well, there wasn't the ability to kind of like get things off her chest. There wasn't ability to kind of like get any kind of, you know, say the things you wanted to say, let that person know how you feel about them, or, you know, vice versa. And this was an opportunity My sister, she called for me to be in her room, and Sunday morning before we left, they decided that they really wanted us to leave because she was so tired. We had such a long day just being together. It was kind of too much for her. So we came Sunday, and then she had called for me to kind of come in her room, and I was lying in the bed with her, and we were having a very loving conversation. She said some things to me that she had never said to me before. And I'm grateful to be able to have said the things to her that I wanted to say. And we're not there. We're not there yet. But she didn't get a good diagnosis. And so we're trying to take things as we can. We're trying to be as spontaneous as we can and try to get down there and do some things. I promised her I'd come down there and make her hamburger, make her a couple hot dogs. And I'm going to go back down there, hopefully in August, and then cook for her again. And this is one of the great things about, this is one of the amazing things. We talked about my dad a lot, and maybe one day I'll do kind of more in-depth. I got to wait for a couple other people. I got to wait for a couple shoes to drop. I'm going to leave it like that. I want to do a whole thing about my old man, but there's a couple shoes that need to drop. You know what I'm saying? You can read between the lines. You know what I'm saying? One of the things, we had a very complicated relationship, and what I'm grateful for is grateful for the fact that I have a great relationship with both my sisters, his daughters, my half sisters. It's almost like real sisters. She's about real sisters. They've known me since I was born. But what I'm grateful for is the fact that my dad kind of got me and fired up about the idea of cooking and the importance of cooking, because it really is this ability to kind of show someone, nurture somebody. Making something for somebody and being able to kind of show them a degree of love, even if you don't have that, if you can't say it, you can show it. And the fact that I've cooked for my sister over the years since I was a kid, one of the things I was all alone for so long, I had to cook for myself. And I was cooking for myself when I was a kid. I was watching Jacques Pepin and I was watching all these guys and I was kind of copying what they were doing, and I was cooking for myself because I was home so much by myself. So it got to the point where, when I got old enough, I used to cook for my sisters all the time. And then from about 20 to 51, I was always cooking for my sister Jenny, and she loved it when I cooked because I would cook the things that she wanted, but she would never get at a restaurant. And then she wouldn't feel the judgment, So I would cook her whatever she wanted. And the fact that, whether or not we had a great relationship with her father or not, he got me interested in cooking because I was able to nurture people, and the fact that I could nurture, and I was asked, my sister asked me to cook for her, was such a, it was amazing. And it was a feeling of like, it was an honor. Like, I felt like it was an honor that she, because you know what? You're in the fucking United States. You could order DoorDash whatever you wanted. There are perfectly good restaurants anywhere, but she wanted me to cook for her. And I made her grilled rice balls, which she loves. I used to make her grilled rice balls all the time. And I made her some grilled Brussels sprouts. I got this new technique for grilling Brussels sprouts that are fucking awesome. And then I made her some steaks. I made her these steaks, these fucking things. I turn around and I'm like, Jenny, I'm going to make these steaks so perfect for you. They're going to be gray and they're going to be devoid of any type of moisture, just the way you like them. And she did. She ate the whole fucking thing. She felt great. She was happy. And the ability to be able to provide for someone this love is one of the reasons why I love knife making so much. And I don't get involved with the whole, this boutique bullshit or these little things ticky-tack shits that knife makers get into. Because my opinion is the most important thing is getting that person food. Being able to nurture someone in a manner that you're able to show a degree of love. And the fact that I can make a knife that's simple, we're trying to keep our prices to the point where people can get them in their hands, just lowered the prices on all of our paring knives. Our paring knives are now $149. I don't know what the fuck I'm thinking. I'm like crazy. I'm giving it all away. But the most important part is what cooking is about being able to nurture people. And I was so honored that Jenny wanted me to cook for her, and it was so great. And I just got off the phone with her like an hour and a half before, about 15 minutes before I started this. And we just talked about how much of a nice time it was, and she just was referring to it as this rich moment. And, you know, we're going to get more on Jenny, and when the time comes to give you some more updates, I'll give you some more updates. But that's what's going on with in the fit. That's my last 2 weeks, ladies and germs. That's my last 2 weeks. That was didn't feel like a break, if I'm being honest. I haven't really had any days off. I have been it's been a lot of traveling, a lot of stress, but at the same time, nurturing, a lot of nurturing. And then I got a call from my mother. They gave her the phone, and then she called, and then she says, "Hello, this is Kathy." And I said, "Hi, Mom, what's going on?" And she goes, "Well, I don't know, you called me." And I said, "Well, no, you called me." And she goes, "All right, well, how are you?" And I said, "I'm fine, how are you?" "Okay." I said, "Well, I'm going to come to visit you soon." And she goes, "Good, I'll see you later." And I hung up the phone, and bingo, bango, bongo, here we are. So, guys, I want to thank you for if you're listening to this and you're knife maker, if you're a knife talk listener, I'm the fault. I took us that second week off, and thank you to the sponsors. Thank you to the listeners. I got some messages wondering where we're coming back. We're back, baby. We're back right here. And in regards to cooking, speaking of cooking and nurturing, my man Bob Morano, Every Day's Feast Day, will be back next week. We have so many goddamn questions. We got to finish them all off. And we're going to have him back on. If you want to send in your cooking questions, send them to him. Pat Quinn is coming back. He's finishing off his forging classes, and we're going to have him back in. So if you have blacksmithing questions, send them in. Another great question with Pat Quinn. And listen, this is what happens. All you guys with the armpit hair, one armpit hair coming in, you're wondering, is this what life is about? You got to cough it up. You got to be there. You got to be there when your name is called and you're needed, you be there. And you do whatever it takes, and you understand that everyone's going through it, and you just got to handle it. You got to tell a joke or two. That's it. Tell a joke or two. Be sincere. Do a nice thing. Be a good person, and we'll see you next week, all right? All right, Craig. Take it away.